Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Ty Blackledge in just a few minutes. His contract extension announced this afternoon by ESPN ABC. And by the way, he gets Clemson and Syracuse this week. But that's the noon game. All right, Vance McDonald. I felt this play set the tone last night. Our play-by-play call of the day.
He's back. Fires it to an open man. And running up the field is Vance McDonald. Vance McDonald runs over a man. He's at the 40, the 35, the 30, the 25, the 20, the 15, 10. Touchdown. Vance McDonald completely ran over strong safety Chris Conte and then just zoomed up the left sideline.
That, I mean, he bowled him over. I felt, I don't know about you, Sean, I felt like that that play set the tone for the night.
Great stiff arm. That was like a double stiff arm. It wasn't too long after that. Conte left the game for a different reason. It was either a knee or an ankle injury or something like that, or a foot. But I think he had a tough time in the film room going through that today. That was tough.
Yeah. All right. Very pleased to bring in someone who's put together an outstanding career, and we congratulate Todd Blackledge on his new contract extension with ABC and ESPN. Todd, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
You work with a lot of great people. What have they meant to the development of your career and the ability to allow you to do what you do at the level you do?
Yeah. Well, you're right. I've been blessed. I mean, I've worked with some of the really great ones. I mean, Mike Tirico, I did Thursday night games early in my career with him. And, you know, then I worked with Vern Lundquist at CBS and Brad Nessler and Mike Patrick and Joe Tessitore and now Sean McDonough. This is actually the second time I've worked with Sean McDonough. So, and of course, Holly Rowe, I've been together for a lot of years. And I just think with all of them, you know, I just have learned about just what it is to be a pro and how to go about your job and the preparation standpoint and the consistency. And, you know, as an analyst, you love a play-by-play guy that's going to try to give you room and give you opportunity to do your thing. And I've just been really, really fortunate to be with guys that have enhanced career and given me a chance to do what I do well.
And you have enhanced theirs as well. But that's me saying that. You don't have to say that.
Well, thank you.
Now let's flip it. You had a chance, obviously, to see Penn State practice. You and I had a very brief conversation before you had to take off that day. But you had a chance to at least see them practice early. You saw the game in the rain against Pitt, and obviously you've seen them since. What's been your impression of Penn State so far?
Well, I think it all starts with Trace McSorley, which everybody knew that it would be. You know, I just think he is such a great competitor and leader and playing at a high level of efficiency again. You know, I think he is one of the most exciting guys in all of college football. He's the guy that if the game was on the line late in the game, a couple minutes left, he's the guy I'd want under center. And so I think it starts with him. I think that some of the questions that everybody had about, you know, how are they going to replace Barkley, how they're going to replace Gesicki, how they're going to replace Deshaun Hamilton, I think those are starting to be answered. And, you know, I think the offensive line is they expected to be better, and I think that they are a little bit better than they were a year ago. So offensively, I think that they're kind of clicking right along the way people expected. Defensively, they're a group that came into the year with some question marks. I still think they got some question marks, but you know, just even seeing them on the practice field, Steve, they're a good looking group. I mean, they've got some good young, athletic, rangy guys, and I just think that, you know, particularly when you're talking in the case of a couple freshmen or guys that have just been backups or special teams guys up until this year, the more reps they get in practice and in games, the better that defense is going to be. So, you know, are they ready for this weekend and arguably the best team that they'll face all season? We'll find out. I think they will be, but it's going to be a heck of a football game.
From a quarterback point of view, when you analyze and look at Dwayne Haskins, what are you seeing in Dwayne Haskins?
So what I'm seeing in Dwayne Haskins is similar to what I'm seeing around college football. It's a very interesting year. You know, last year at the quarterback position, we had guys that were first-round draft picks. I think they're probably all going to be starting in the NFL this week, plus Lamar Jackson, all these high-profile, high-drafted guys. We don't necessarily have that this year, but we have some young guys that are stepping up and playing brilliantly, whether it's Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama. You know, I've got Clemson this week. They've made a switch to Trevor Lawrence, their freshman quarterback. And I think you're seeing the same thing with Kyler Murray at Oklahoma and Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State. They're talented passers who can also run, and in some cases taking over for a guy that was maybe known just the opposite. JT Barrett was known more as a runner than a passer. And what Dwayne's been able to bring to that offense is a whole new level of explosiveness and involving their playmakers and stretching the field that Ohio State really has not had since Cardale Jones was the quarterback for those three games at the end of the 2014 season. So, you know, I think that's what you're seeing. There's a little bit of a trend with that where teams that, you know, maybe have been used to having a certain kind of quarterback are now going to a guy that's a better passer, and it is paying dividends for him.
I'll take a page out of your book. Your first career start was actually at Missouri.
Right.
And, in fact, you broke off a 43-yard run for a touchdown in that game. Now, that's your first career start. Dwayne Haskins, I know he played the second half at Michigan last year, but he's only had one other game this year that was away from Columbus, and two-thirds of the crowd was Ohio State. What's the thought process that a quarterback making a start like that on the road where they don't have a lot of experience doing it, what do they have to think of or even not think of?
Well, you've got to keep your poise. You know, obviously he did go on the road and you know, TCU gave him a heck of a ball game for a while, and then they were able to kind of settle down and make plays down the stretch. But, you know, going into a place like Beaver Stadium at night with that kind of crowd and the energy, you've got to keep your poise because you're not going to be able to communicate as easily as you do at home. You know, the burden really, more so than being on the quarterback, I think, in a situation like that, is on your offensive tackles.
Yes.
And their ability, you know, they're going to have to kind of look in at the football. If you use silent counts, that gives an edge to, you know, speed rushers for defense of the home team. So you got to keep your poise. You got to realize that Penn State's going to make some plays, but you got to kind of stick to what you've been doing. And really, if you can run the football and have some balance and have some early success, you can neutralize that crowd a little bit.
You mentioned you've got the Clemson game this weekend. Lawrence is going to get the start at quarterback. When you've watched Bryant and then you've watched Lawrence, what, in your opinion, watching them, what do you think gives Dabo the best chance to win?
Well, I think Trevor Lawrence does. You know, I think that Kelly Bryant is a proven guy, and he's a really good runner and a pretty good passer. I think Trevor Lawrence is an excellent passer and a pretty good runner. And I think, you know, you can beat most of the teams on your schedule with either guy. But I think if you want to play for a championship, and we saw this last year because we had Alabama-Clemson in the semifinal game, and Alabama dominated the game. And I think the reason that they were able to control the football game is because Kelly Bryant wasn't good enough as a passer to beat them and to really threaten their defense. I think this guy gives them that threat. Because when Deshaun Watson was the quarterback for 2 years in a row, they played nose-to-nose with Alabama, beating them once for a national championship. But you have to be able to throw the football against the elite defensive football teams that you might face. And I think that's what he gives. You know, I had Notre Dame last week, Steve, and they went to a switch and went to Ian Book and replaced a really good runner and a great leader in Brandon Wimbush. And in one game, really in one half, Notre Dame's offense looked completely different. You know, they had scored 24 points was the most they scored in any of their first three games. They had 28 in the first half against Wake Forest.
In fact, the impression I got, Todd, about Notre Dame was that I get the feeling Brian Kelly really likes his defense, and he felt that he needed to get more out of offense. That's why he went with Book. Would that be fair?
That's absolutely fair. I think that's exactly what he saw, and I think he also realized this is the perfect time to make this move because they have Stanford coming in this week. You don't want to use that game against a proven team like Stanford to try to break in the new quarterback. They got Virginia Tech next, which up until that Old Dominion game, you would have expected that was going to be a difficult challenge against the Bud Foster defense. So it made sense to make the move now and let Ian Book play against Wake Forest, even though it was on the road. And it certainly made Brian Kelly look very smart for doing it when he did.
I believe the Clemson-Alabama national championship game where Watson and they won in the last play. I think you did that on radio, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I did both of those games on radio. So, and Alabama beat them the year before.
Yeah. So in that game, Clemson ran 99 plays, if I recall correctly. And that's one of the few times where I felt like, my goodness, Alabama looks tired. What has pace, now you have to have the right people to do it, but in the games that you've done, what's pace meant?
Tempo is huge. You know, I am watching the film of Syracuse's upset of Clemson last year up in the Carrier Dome. And, you know, that was not a fluke win. Syracuse outplayed them that day completely. Now, Kelly Bryant got hurt.
Yes.
Got a concussion, didn't finish the game. But the problem for Clemson was on defense. They could not stop Syracuse. And a lot of the big plays that Syracuse got, particularly the ones Eric Dungy, their quarterback, made, were the result of their tempo. And Clemson was not able to get their feet set. They weren't in the right position. They were late getting calls onto the field, and Syracuse just kept going at them. So tempo is huge. Now, obviously, it's a two-edged sword. If you want to play with fast tempo and you go three and out, then you're your own worst enemy. Right. So you have to be able to sustain drives, make some first downs in order to play with tempo. But if you've got it rolling and you prevent a defense from substituting and you can keep the same personnel on the field and go, 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 it puts a lot of duress and it simplifies the defense. They can't do as much as they would like to do and match personnel and do all those kind of things if you're going fast.
In going around from campus to campus like you have over the years, what are some of the similarities you see just in programs where, like, okay, that's what I see everywhere else, and what are a couple places where you go to where, to you, it's like, okay, it's a little bit different?
Well, I think your upper echelon elite programs, there's a lot of similarities in how they approach things and just how big the game feels when you finally get to Saturday, whether it's the tailgating or just the buzz or the energy around town. You know, people ask me, where are your favorite places to do games? And if I had to list the top five in no particular order, I love doing games at Alabama, Georgia, Auburn. I love doing games at Penn State, particularly the big night games there. Clemson is a great place. University of Washington is a great place. There are some special, special places for college football, and you just feel it the moment you go into town. One of the things that's different in a lot of places this year or in the last couple years, you know, some teams are doing this and some teams don't. There's a lot of teams that like practicing in the morning. And that's really different. And I see the value of it. You know, your kids have to take care of themselves the night before practice. And, maybe you don't run as much risk of guys going out and doing things they shouldn't be doing the night before because it's early in for meetings and practice. And then they've got the rest of the day off to take classes and to do the things that they do. And so I definitely see the value in it. And there's a lot more teams doing that now than ever before.
That was the MO of John Chaney of Temple Basketball forever. 5 a.m. Yeah. practices. That's what John did forever at Temple. Todd, congratulations. Well deserved. You are, without question, one of the best in the business. We appreciate the time you gave us today.
Well, thank you, and I'm looking forward to watching the game. One of the beauties of doing the noon game this week is I am going to be settled in somewhere with a bag of popcorn or something, getting ready to watch that game Saturday night because it should be a beauty.
Well, my best to you and your family. Is it Belmont now where the boys are?
Well, I have one of them at Belmont. So okay. I have one that's out of college and living in New Jersey. I have one who is a senior at Michigan. I have one who's a freshman at Belmont. And I have a sophomore in high school at home.
Very nice. Hey, congratulations. Great family and great work as always.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
Todd Blackledge, ESPN, ABC. Final half hour, Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State football. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Let's see. Le'Veon Bell. Let's see. Jenny Vrentis, Penn State graduate, by the way, from SI.com, polled five teams on what Le'Veon Bell is worth. Now, obviously, this is laced with anonymity and should. Now, we all know what Todd Gurley got. And so they wanted to at least get a feel for what they think he's worth. And the Gurley contract came up a lot. And also, they've noted, like for example, Adrian Peterson supports Bell completely. Usually players support each other's business decisions anyway because obviously it benefits them. You haven't heard much from Bell during his holdout other than the video he posted on TMZ that was quickly posted by Sean. You seem to be enamored by it.
I knew I shouldn't have hit send.
Been trying to tell you. One team decision maker pointed out that running backs tend to get the best offer from their own team. Another echoed that sentiment, saying Bell should have taken what the Steelers offered. The caveat of these projections is that it's simply how these teams view his absolute value, not what the market will bear. All it takes is one club to flush with salary cap space, New York Jets, and desperate for a new offensive playmaker, New York Jets, to give Bell what he wants. It happens every year in free agency, and clearly Bell and his agent are betting on that. Let's see. The consensus among the five polled was that Le'Veon Bell's value ranks below Todd Gurley's for reasons such as age, wear and tear, injury and suspension history. Bell has played 16 games in the regular season once in his entire career. He has been suspended twice for violating the league's substance abuse policy. One executive said he'd peg Bell somewhere between Gurley and Jerick McKinnon's four-year $36.9 million deal, noting that Gurley is younger and more explosive. The highest estimate was a four-year $56 million deal, which, by the way, is $14 million a year. That person thought Bell had a chance to get $60 million because being the highest-paid running back appears to be important to him, but that would come through incentives or bonuses rather than salary base. Now, if I recall correctly, didn't the Steelers offer him more than this? At one point?
I thought the Browns... That's the part that kind of confused me for the duration of all this as they were trying to hammer out a deal. It just didn't seem like there was all that much between the two.
Between Gurley and Bell?
Well, between Bell and what the Steelers wanted to offer Bell.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. I understand emotionally you want to be the highest paid. I got that. But I think it's very interesting when they talk about Gurley, they talk about his age and the fact that he's dependable.
Maybe Bells just has another dollar figure in his mind with the whole, well, you know, Kirk Cousins getting guaranteed money. Maybe. Now all of a sudden, you know, now Lev Bell must think he wants guaranteed money. But what that number is,
I don't know
if he'll ever share it with us.
Well, I just think it's interesting that these five executives all think Gurley's worth more. And younger, yes. More explosive, yes. But here's the other part, more dependable. And please, Steeler fans, don't, oh, he's dependable. Really, you can't keep getting suspended and injured. He's not dependable. All right. And you can't star in the Kansas City game and then, you know, have people searching around for you in the AFC Championship game. Where is he? All right, next half hour, Paul Keels. Play-by-play, Ohio State.
Before you head to the Bloomsburg Fair, stop and get to Sunbury Motors 4. Sunbury Motors is going to price all new 4s at a level that makes it impossible to say no. You'll be feeling great driving to the fair in a 2018 Ford Escape for only $18,820. Sunbury Motors Ford wants to continue selling 7 Fords a day through the Bloomsburg Fair. Pack up the family in your 2018 Explorer. Explorers start under $30,000 at SMC, and they have 20 to choose from. Every edge. Edge, Focus, Fusion, Fiesta, EcoSport will be discounted for SMC to sell 7 new Fords every day through the end of the fair. Sunbury Motors has 70 new F-150s marked down to as low as $25,969 and just announced 0% for 72 months on F-150s. You'll save thousands over the term of your loan. SMC needs 7 sales every day through the end of the Bloomsburg Fair. We'll see you at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Todd Blackledge for being on in the previous half hour. 3:30 half hour, we had Neil Coulon, USA Today, and the Steelers. This half hour, Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State football. Tomorrow, Jack Hamm on the show. Jack will join us at 4:06 tomorrow. No show on Thursday. The King arrives on Friday. And the King is in last place. Not a pretty scene.
No.
You are in first place.
I can't believe it. Went 5-0 last week in the picks.
Wow.
The exact quote that I said to myself this morning when I was tabulating the numbers. I was like, how'd this happen, huh? But it's like these other... I compare this to all these other great NFL teams, great early on, September, October. Yeah, I need to make hay as we get toward the end of the year. That's when it counts.
Hmm. Yeah, be careful driving my car. All right, so...
right.
I'd send somebody in digital media out to start it.
Okay.
That's not funny. What does that mean? All right. Let's the great one is with us, Paul Keels. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, great one. How are you?
Doing great. It's great to be on with you last night, by the way. We had some fun with that.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you for doing this. All right. Through four games, what do you know about Ohio State through four games?
We know, much like Penn State, they've got an offense that can move the ball, rack up yards, rack up points. We know they've got two very good tailbacks, a wide receiving group that has a number of people that can make plays. Those were things we knew when the season started. The things that we know that we didn't know then, Steve, are the fact that it's an offensive line with a move of Michael Jordan from guard to center is not only a line with great size, but a line that is performed and protected very well. And we know that there's a quarterback playing the game for the Buckeyes that everybody was optimistic based on short doses from last year he could be good. I don't know that anybody dreamed he could perform the way that he has. Now, some of that you take into consideration three of the four opponents they've played, but the way Dwayne Haskins has played has been a major pleasant surprise for this football team.
What aren't you sure about yet, because it'll take a game like this to show it?
I think a lot of that involves the defensive side, because even though they're undefeated, and even though that line has been incredibly disruptive, and the thought that it still could be without Nick Bosa, not as disruptive, but still pretty disruptive, I think there's still some questions about this linebacker group and this defensive secondary, because Oregon State and TCU have hit some individual big plays against them. So those are the things that, while some of that has been taken up a little bit, those are the things we still don't know about them defensively.
You have had the chance to watch every play for Nick Bosa during the course of his career. How dynamic has he been, and is there a domino effect as to what he meant to maybe a tackle or a linebacker?
He was special, Steve, with the things that he was able to do. And much like when his brother played at Ohio State, when he drew extra attention from the offense, it allowed opportunities for others to make plays. So you were kind of having to choose your poison. The domino effect mostly will involve the rotations of other people, and it still will involve some very good players and some good young defensive linemen that have gotten everybody's attention. But I don't know that there's anybody as good as Draymond Jones has been, as good as Robert Landers has been, as good at times as Chase Young has been. There's nobody that's at the level that Nick Bosa is.
What did Dwayne Haskins show you, and what was a tough football game at TCU?
You know, he showed the same thing that he's shown in the other games, Steve, that he doesn't get rattled. He's a guy that, you know, you don't see the head on a pivot, constantly looking right, left, and in the middle for receivers. He plays like a guy that's had more experience than what he's really had. A lot of that has to do, you would imagine, with the fact that he was really thrown into the fire in Ann Arbor last year in the second half when JT Barrett got hurt. But also it tells you about just the makeup of this young man, why they recruited him, why they thought he would be a good fit for Ohio State. He can throw the deep ball like Cardell Jones did, but he can also throw the short touch passes. And, you know, he hasn't really been put in a position for the most part to have to try and run the football. So it's a different look from what there was for a million years with JT Barrett. But he just seems to be a lot calmer than you would think a guy that has played as little as he's played.
In the Ohio State offense previously, Braxton Miller, for example, he'd have Carlos Hyde, and Hyde was a brilliant blocker leading him into the hole. Then JT gets there, and Zeke Elliott was a brilliant blocker that would lead. This is besides the other attributes they have, but they were great blockers leading the quarterback into the hole. I always felt that Weber and Dobbins weren't quite that kind of guy, because you don't make many Hydes and many Elliotts out there. So is this offense ever actually better suited for the tailbacks based on how they play?
It could be, looking at it that way, Steve. And again, I think there's probably a little more of a good feeling across the board about all five offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Even though they've had some good ones in the past, I think, you know, the move to center of Michael Jordan answered the biggest question that they had to face. And I think when you look at guys like Demetrius Knox and Isaiah Prince, and even Thayer Mumford as a second year sophomore, they're playing at a very, very good level. So I think, yeah, it does give it a little bit of a different look. Those guys aren't the blockers of the other two were. They're not bad. But I think the other thing that they've done really is they've given Ohio State what everybody hopes to have to go through a grinding Big Ten season. Two backs you know you can lean on, and two guys that have helped take some of the pressure off a new starting quarterback.
The wideouts, what have they meant to Haskins? Now, look, he's done a lot of great things himself, but what have they meant to his development?
A ton, Steve, because you've got, number one, a very unselfish group. You've got three guys in that wide receiver group that are co-captains, and Paris Campbell, Terry McLaurin, and Johnny Dixon. Very unselfish guys that, this will give you a good example. Urban Meyer, in his first press conference back from his suspension a week ago Monday, couldn't stop talking about Benjamin Victor's game against TCU. Victor didn't catch a single pass, but it was how he blocked downfield and helped things go. It's a very unselfish group, a group that competes in a good way with one another to push one another. And I think the other part of it that maybe gets lost in the wash, remember, they've got an interim position coach in Brian Hartline, who was put in that spot after Zach Smith was dismissed in late July. So it's been a group that performed very well last year under Zach Smith, and it's been a group that under Brian Hartline has continued that.
What does it tell you about the program they've built there that something like this happens where Urban is not around, yet at least from the outside looking in, it looks as if on the field nothing changed?
I think what helped, Steve, is the fact that when Urban was put on leave in early August, the practice plan for summer camp was already set. So, you know, Ryan Day, Greg Schiano, Kevin Wilson, all the other coaches, they were able to put in place what it was that Urban had set up. And I think a lot of that even went through during that first game week when Urban was not there during the weekly practices. And, you know, they knew what needed to be done, how he would want it to do, and nobody was really sitting there trying to campaign for their own self, even though I think it was a great resume builder for Ryan Day. And then when Urban was back coaching during practice for the next 2 weeks, even though he couldn't be at those games, I think that further cemented just the overall plan that they had for this team.
Defensively, when you look at them, what has that defensive front meant to the linebackers and the secondary, Paul? I mean, has that allowed them to play a little bit better because of how the front plays?
I think so, Steve, although there's still some question about those two position areas. Tough Borland has made a remarkable comeback from an Achilles injury to be playing at the amount that he's playing now. They like what possibly Baron Browning can do. I think Malik Harrison is a guy that really, really, along with Pete Werner, the two outside linebackers, are guys that we're really going to be talking about through the rest of this year and in the future, the guys that will play that position at the very high level. And the back end, you know what you get in Jordan Fuller as an all-conference safety. It's been the other safety spot that's taken a little growth, and they had to play one game without Jordan Fuller. The cornerback rotation of the three guys with Jeff Okuda, Kendall Sheffield, and Damon Arnett, it have been good, but then there have also been instances where they've kind of gotten themselves in a difficult spot. And you don't know if there's a safety blanket with that defensive line that it allows guys to gamble. You know, I think in a couple of cases, certainly Darius Anderson at TCU and Artavius Pierce at Oregon State, great individual talents who broke some gigantic plays against them. But you know how coaches are. They also like to have the ammunition to get the guys in the right mind frame. And they're as good as it's been for this team. There are those defensive instances that they know they need to tighten up on.
Paul, you and I both know that Urban Meyer puts a lot of personal time into the special teams. How good have they been through the first third of the season?
They've been great, and you know it's been a number of things, Stephen. As you know, what he does and what a lot of other coaches do, they put a premium on those guys that cover the punts. And he's got guys like Terry McLaurin and Johnny Dixon, you know, guys that are starting receivers that are fighting to get on the punt cover team so they can get down there and down those footballs. You know, certainly Drew Chrisman has done an outstanding job, even though he hasn't punted that many times, of being able to pin opponents in. And you know, And Sean Nuremberg, who was redshirting the last time Ohio State came to State College, now has, I think it's 205 consecutive PATs made, all of them in his career, which is a Big Ten and an Ohio State record. The NCAA record, I think, is 233. So it's, I mean, long snapper, holder, punter, kicker. It's been an outstanding area as far as the coverage. Like everybody, they'd love to see a few returns break. But what that's done, especially what it did in the TCU game, really helped tilt the field in their direction.
Yeah, in fact, I was listening to the broadcast the other day, and you were talking about how many in a row Nuremberg had made. So
We wait till after he makes them to bring it up, Steve.
Yeah, see, that's the announcer's creed right there.
No seventh-inning no-hitter, Jinx.
What no-hitter? I mean, I haven't seen anybody reach base yet, but I don't want to say it. What's your impression of Penn State from what you've been able to see?
You know, and I just this morning finished watching the end of the Illinois game, and just like you, I was listening to you guys Friday night at the end of the half when it was, what, I think 21-17?
Yes.
Right going to half, and I thought, what in the devil is going on here? And who's masquerading in the Illinois uniforms? I think that we've seen certainly this offense is incredibly explosive. Which is not a surprise to anybody, given what Trace has done. I don't know why people are surprised at Miles Sanders. The little doses we've had the same, you knew that he would be good. Yeah. You know, DeAndre Tompkins is kind of like Aaron Kraft. How long has he been there? you know, so I think we all have known what the offense could be. But what I was impressed with, Steve, especially from paying attention from early on to now, is how better it seems like the defense is getting. Jan Johnson certainly looks like he's becoming another one of those, I don't know if you'd ever say great Penn State linebackers, but a very, very good one. You know, I think Givens has always been a guy that's been very impressive. And, I think you're starting to see the way the athleticism of the back end has helped this defense tighten some things up.
Aaron Kraft just left, didn't he? I think.
Oh.
Great one. You know, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you and Jim and Skip and the whole crew on Saturday night. You're among the best.
Well, likewise. Always good to talk to you and look forward to seeing you too, Steve.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. Take
Paul Keels, play-by-play voice, Ohio State football, basketball. They are a great crew. Great to be around. Jim Lachey, Skip Bosick. Basketball, Ronnie Stokes, too. We'll wrap things up in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, Jack Ham coming up on the show tomorrow. We'll talk with him. Also, our high school roundtable tomorrow. Zach Showers will join us. Greg Wetzel will join us. And the Shikellamy Person of the Week will join us. We never know on that one.
True.
We get a lot of assurances.
Yep.
And we get bailouts.
Occasionally.
Yeah. We did a segment every week with Doug Birdsong. Doug would be there.
Yep. Without fail.
Because that's Doug. I don't know. He'd be there. Well, there's a lot to talk about with this game. Obviously, I've done a lot of shows already today. I've already done three. I've got a fourth one to do here at 5:35. I think this one's in Akron, I think. And I got to do one in Chicago tomorrow. I kind of cut things off for tomorrow, except for the one in Chicago, because it was Dave Ennett. You know, I mean, anybody who does is part of the broadcast fraternity here in the Big Ten. If they ask me to do something, I'll do it in a heartbeat, because I ask them to do favors, too. They're on the show all the time. So Dave got a hold of me, and he said, geez, Steve, we do this podcast. I said, hey, Dave, for you, yes. Anybody else I would have told no. You know, unless it was one of the other, like say Indiana wanted to do it or Minnesota would, I would have said yes. But outside of the conference, no, I would not have done it. Only because they want me to do it in between taping the TV show and on my way over to doing the quarterback club. Tomorrow's a tight day. That's why tomorrow's kind of a problem with a couple of things. And now Thursday, I'm going to tell everybody, hey, get a hold of me on Thursday. The Phillies are playing. No, I'm not going to do that. No. Sort of in the mood not to be found. No, that's good. Do that. And I think I'm supposed to judge a talent show at Nittanyville on Friday night at 8 o'clock. I mean, like, I know talent. Are you kidding me? There's no shot on this. There's none. No shot.
So is this a kids' talent show?
No, it's the Nittanyville guys.
Oh, okay.
You know, I guess they're putting together some sort of talent show for Friday night.
Oh, over at Gate A. Oh, okay.
And they asked if I could be one of the judges, you know, and I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. So how long is this going to take? 45 minutes. I said, I'll definitely do it. It'll take 2 hours. Nah, really, I'm very busy. 45 minutes. Okay, all right, I can do that, sure. Yeah. That's what we do. Yeah. So, I mean, like, I drove past there this morning. It's pouring. It's pouring. Now, right now, it's good. And we might have another line of thunderstorms, and that's it. For the rest of the week? Okay. That's fine. Well, yeah, I went by this morning. I mean, there are tents up all over the place. Been there since Monday night. And they're all in those tents. And it is pouring to beat the band. I give them credit. But as I told them, the first game, they asked me to go over and talk to the kids briefly, and I did. And I was in between. I do the first 1-3 and 7-9 innings of the spikes. So when I got to the fourth inning, I left the booth, left the ballpark, walked across the street, and I talked to him. I said, look, this is what college is all about. I understand, you know, that classes and degrees and doing well in the world of academia and getting yourself a job. I said, yeah. I said, but what you're doing right here, camping out before a football game, this is what you're going to talk about the rest of your lives. This is the experience that's going to define what you think of your college experience 15 years now. It's not going to be your econ class, where you get a chance in college to do something different. And that is, you know, and that's really cool. Ah. By the way, one note on the Steelers last night. Keep in mind, the Steelers won the game last night, and their right guard, right tackle weren't there. They kind of got away with it last night, which is good. So. Well, I think that's just something I wanted to throw in there. Because I think it's kind of lost in the wash a little bit that they did that. So. Okay. Great to have you with us on the show today. Appreciate it. By the way, you're wondering, has Penn State, like, you know, Ryan Day's received a lot of praise, and justifiably, by the way, for the great work he has done at Ohio State this year. You do know Penn State's faced him before, right? They faced him when he was the offensive coordinator at Boston College in the Pinstripe Bowl. Dwayne Haskins, 75.7% completion percentage so far. Wow. He's been something else. Jack Ham tomorrow, High School Roundtable with the Shikellamy Guest of the Week.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.